Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. Alberta Ingenuity has a new man at the helm. After 32 years with the National Research Council in Ottawa, Dr. Peter Hackett has found a new scientific frontier to conquer, and that's in Alberta. He shares his vision to make Alberta the best place in the world to do research. And Water Under Fire. This seven-part series on DVD is a frightening look at the environmental degradation of Canada's water resources. It was produced by Dr. Jim Byrne at the University of Lethbridge, and he traveled from the Atlantic to the Pacific and the 49th parallel to Great Bear Lake, and everywhere our water is under attack. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. The Alberta Ingenuity Fund is heading into its fifth year with the promise of another $500 million and a new president. Dr. Peter Hackett is the scientist taking over the reins after the retirement of Dr. Bill Bridger. Peter comes to Alberta Ingenuity after a long and distinguished career with the National Research Council. His work on lasers led to an interest in the emerging field of nanotechnology, and that eventually led to the establishment of the NRC's National Institute of Nanotechnology in Alberta. I asked Peter what got him interested in science in the first place.
Oh, that's a good question to start out with. I guess it was always fascinating, right? Science always throws up things that are new and astounding, and when you're young, wonderful things to learn. I guess my earliest real strong memory is reading Isaac Asimov's book, The Building Blocks of the Universe, when I was 14 or something like that. And it talked about the chemical elements and a little story about each one. And that got me fascinated with chemistry.
Is that what you studied then?
Yeah. And I went to university, studied chemistry. And then I did my PhD in photochemistry, which is the action of light on molecules, basically.
So then what brought you from England to Canada?
Well, I was young, and my wife and I wanted to see the world. So we had a position arranged in California at the University of Irvine. And that was for a year after I'd finished my PhD. And in between, we decided to come to Canada to the National Research Council. And, well, things just opened up for us there, and we stayed for, in fact, 32 years, much longer than we ever thought, but it was a great time.
The National Research Council, what were some of the things that you worked on there?
Well, I started there in 1972, and about this time, it wasn't too long after lasers had been discovered, but at about this time, there were a couple of strong Canadian companies, really Lumonics was the stronger of them, and they had two kinds of laser technology: the high-powered pulsed carbon dioxide laser that gave infrared radiation, and a little bit later on they had this high-powered pulsed excimer laser that gave ultraviolet radiation. So I was a photochemist and been trained on what light did to molecules. So I got into what lasers did to molecules and did a lot of work around trying to make things with lasers, basically, yeah. And things like carbon-13, which is a rare isotope of carbon and quite valuable. Vitamin D, I made vitamin D with excimer lasers, the stuff you have in your milk.
Now, how do you do that?
Oh, well, basically you shine light on one material and activate that material and it converts into another. But the trick is to do that in a selective and efficient way. Since lasers, particularly at that time, were so expensive, it cost $30,000 to buy a laser, I can recall. You have to make something that's either a pharmaceutical or a really high-valued compound.
Well, you have an Alberta connection, and one of the things that you helped to do was to set up the new Nanotechnology Institute. What got you involved in that?
Oh, two ways to approach this. A, I was interested in nanotechnology, and as my career went along, I started to use lasers to make very active and very small molecules. And these were like tiny, tiny little pieces of metal or tiny, tiny pieces of a catalyst. And this became the area of nanotechnology as things evolved. So I had an interest in nanotechnology. But a little bit later, I'd become the vice president of research at NRC. And so I had this very broad interest in a lot of things. And I was asked by the president to see if I couldn't create an NRC institute in Alberta, because it was very embarrassing to NRC that Alberta was one of the, I think, only two provinces where we didn't have an institute. NRC has institutes all across the country, but at that time, none in Alberta. So I was talking to people, trying to find out what would be a good area to start up a new NRC institute. Was there any interest in having an NRC institute? And over a couple of years, we explored what the possibilities would be. And finally, a kind of light went on my head that nanotechnology might be the thing, because it was a new a platform from which many other areas of science and engineering could be explored. And a number of folks said, yeah, that would be a great idea. Alberta's interested in doing this. And pretty soon we had a commitment from the minister, Lorne Taylor, at that time. And then it was a matter of trying to make sure that the federal government could make an equal commitment. And by a kind of ratcheting process, we got both levels of government engaged and interested in doing it as a partnership. So we developed the National Institute for Nanotechnology as a really great new way of doing something, where the university, the federal government, and the provincial government all got together and pooled resources to create something really quite different and very encouraging, I think.
When you look across the country, there's the National Research Councils, there's the Alberta Research Council, and then there's all these different institutes. Why do we need these?
It's a good question. If somebody were to design things from first principles, they might do it a different way. A lot of these things grow up kind of organically. Each of them has their own history. And each of them gives, I guess, a different culture and a different environment for doing science. And the trick, if you're a manager or a senior manager, is trying to match up that culture and environment so that science gets done in the most creative way, you know. So we might not need all of the institutes, but hopefully some of them are really well tuned to their mission.
Well, when you're out here working on the getting the Nanotechnology Institute set up, Alberta must have grown on you, because now you've moved out here and you're head of the Alberta Ingenuity Fund. Why did you come to the Alberta Ingenuity Fund?
Well, a number of reasons, and all of them good. I loved working in Alberta. There's very much this can-do attitude. And I'd worked in every province in Canada and done a project with most of the governments as, from that position of VP research. And it was just easier and more exciting to work here. So I had a great impression. I also have two daughters and a granddaughter in Calgary, and that played into the equation. And, frankly, it was time that I'd moved on. As I said, I was 32 years at NRC, and I'd only come for a year, so it was time we moved on anyway. those were sorts of the reasons why we took a look. And then we realized that the Alberta Ingenuity Fund had a great support from the government. Basically, it's an endowment fund, so the principal isn't used, only the interest is spent. So it means that the funding's there for a good long time, so you can really plan to achieve something. There was good support from the government, and I look forward to working on something where in 5 or 10 years I could think that could make a really positive difference. So that was why I came.
The Alberta Ingenuity Fund is heading into its fifth year now. What do you see as being the direction that you would like to take this research program?
Well, I see three directions that I want to emphasize, and I'll tell you about each of them. At the same time, I don't want to lose sight of something that we have been doing since 2000 when we were started, and that's supporting students. So right now, we've got about 200 students that we're supporting, and we've been doing that for about 3 years. So none of them are graduated yet. We're going to keep expanding our student program, and we'll end up with about 320 students in the program, and we'll start to see graduates this year, next year, and the year after. I think that's going to make a big difference, and we'll have about 5 million a year in students. But as for the new areas, well, the areas that I want to emphasize, there are these three. And one is to bring really top-flight researchers to the province. I figure that with 20 really world-class people, we could change the name of the game. And I'd like to make Alberta known as the place where the very best people would hope to come, because they can get high-level support for a good long period. Right now, if you were to ask where the best places in the world to go might be, you might get the answer California or Texas. And I think Alberta has the chance to change that. So that's one direction that I want to take. And let's call that scholars or chairs, but it's getting changing the name of the game and getting the absolute best people here. That's one area. The next area is to organize the research in Alberta into these Alberta Ingenuity Centers. And we have four at the minute, one in water, one in situ upgrading of energy, one in carbohydrate science, and one in machine learning. And I'd like to do more of those centers. There'll be two types of those centers. One will be in emerging areas that we probably haven't even heard of right now, and an example of that might be quantum information, the kinds of things where it turns out that Alberta has a few people that are very strong, and we want to build upon that. The other type of center would be the sorts of thing that we're doing right now with our Prion research initiative, where Alberta's got a reason to want to build research expertise. In case of Prion, it's because of the impact on animal and human health and the economic fallout from that. So Alberta has a reason to be there. It's going to invest $38 million over the next 7 years, and it wants to bring all of the expertise across Alberta together. And then the other area that I want to work is with Alberta's knowledge-based companies. People talk about technology transfer and the need to increase technology transfer. I think I would rather work to make the university strong and to make the knowledge-based companies strong, and then I think technology transfer is going to happen naturally. So currently we support 40 researchers in Alberta's companies. The board has decided already to double that, so by next year we'll have 80 people in Alberta's knowledge-based companies. And I want to put alongside that some support for pre-competitive research in these companies.
Now, you're supposed to be getting some more money to help bring all these plans into fruition. How much will that be?
Well, let me first say that we really need that money to make these plans real. Currently, the endowment's got about $540 million in it, and that means we can spend about $22 million a year. And our current programs are getting quite close to that. So I can't do these new things without new money. Now, the government has Bill 1, I think, has gone through second reading and is in committee or some such thing. And Bill 1 says that they'll put another $500 million into the endowment when the Minister of Finance thinks it's appropriate. So I guess we have to hope that the oil and gas prices stay high and that the the government's revenues are high and that they're able to follow through on making that investment. If Alberta can do that, then it can send that signal around the world that this is a great place to come and do research, and also see that research turned into some impact on society or on the economy. So we want to make Alberta that kind of place where people can, A, follow their dreams, make them real, but also where other folks around the world can see that happening and want to come here too, because that's kind of how this province has developed. People have come here, and through their ingenuity, they've created the future potential. The oil sands didn't give up their oil naturally. You know, folks had to figure that out. So it was with agriculture until Noble had made the Noble plow. You know, you couldn't really do dry land agriculture. So the province is built upon the ingenuity of individuals. And that's the game we're in, stimulating that.
And the weather's not so bad, is it?
Well, the weather's great. And it's far better than the sorts of things my friends in Ottawa were saying last October when we moved here. In fact, the weather's a pussycat.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Peter Hackett, President and CEO of the Alberta Ingenuity Fund. Water Under Fire is a new 7-part television series that looks at all the different factors that are putting Canada's water at risk. There's industrial and agricultural development, pollution of our watersheds, and even our glaciers. There's the health concerns over waterborne pathogens, and then there's climate change and the impact that is having on snowmelt and water supply. Water Under Fire was produced by Dr. Jim Byrne from the University of Lethbridge, and it includes interviews with water scientists like Drs. David Schindler, Suzanne Bailey, Joe Rasmussen, and Steve Harudi, and that's just to name a few. Jim Byrne was in Edmonton on Earth Day to speak to the local chapter of the Council of Canadians about what he saw touring the country from coast to coast.
Well, I mean, Eastern Canada's got lots of water problems. You know, they've got acid rain, they've got nutrient problems, they've got invasive species, they've got, you know, just so many problems to deal with, all kinds of chemical contaminants and biological contaminants. So, you know, it's a real potpourri. But, you know, the ones that we featured tonight, so in this presentation for Council of Canadians, you know, were some of the agricultural runoff in Quebec, and of course, you know, that is nutrient based, which causes eutrophication of streams and rivers, and then of course we also talked about Walkerton, which, you know, is a microbial contamination of water and something, you know, waterborne pathogens which ended up killing people and making very many people sick. You know, those are just a couple of the problems, or the many problems actually, that the series touches on, and the whole series only really can skim the top of you know, all of the issues and the challenges. So, you know, we featured tonight in the presentation some of the really interesting and topics of great concern, but there's lots more, and you know, underneath there in more of the series and that we could go back to.
Well, certainly one of the examples of that point would be the cleanup of gold mines in the Northwest Territories. How much does it cost to look after that one mine that you talked about?
Well, there's two mines in the territories that are being cleaned up right now by, you know, the federal government. Colimac Mine in near Great Bear Lake is about a $70 million cleanup, and you know, that's because the former mine operator walked away from the mine and left it in a fairly polluted state. So Indian and Northern Affairs Canada is now cleaning it up, apparently to the tune, they told us, of about $70 million. Worse is the giant mine just outside of Yellowknife. You know, the giant mine, the mining company walked away from it, and I think it was the same mine company, Royal Oak. They walked away from it and left a $500 million or $400 million cleanup. And that's now apparently what we're doing. You know, we're investing $400 million to put refrigeration units in to keep the permafrost frozen around that mine waste so that it won't contaminate a much larger area in and around Yellowknife. You know, it's just amazing to see, you know, the taxpayers, Canada, taking on the environmental problems of these companies.
Well, just looking at some of the problems that are close to home, if we look at what's happening with the glaciers in the Rocky Mountains, not only are the glaciers receding, but there's also an awful lot of pollutants there. Why are there so many pollutants that are concentrated in the glaciers?
What happens, actually, the snow fields and the glaciers, many of these pollutants are quite volatile. You know, they become a vapor, they become a gas quite easily. And that gas gets transported in the atmosphere, right? I mean, the atmosphere is constantly moving. What happens is the gas tends, you know, if it's vaporized in a tropical environment, in a warm summer day, where it will return to a liquid and then be scavenged out of the atmosphere is typically someplace where it's colder. Well, the places where it's always colder are in the far north and in alpine environments, in high mountain environments, much colder higher in the atmosphere. So that's why those become traps for volatile chemicals that are traveling in our atmosphere. The Rocky Mountains become a trap for those things. The Arctic becomes a trap for those contaminants. And that's why we're seeing, you know, intensive buildups of many of those contaminants in those colder areas, alpine areas and Arctic areas. And it's just a simple physics.
What kind of contaminants are they, and what impact are they having on our health now?
Well, there's a whole list of them. A series of what we call persistent organic pollutants. Some benzenes and hexanes and PCBs and DDTs, which were banned some time ago. There's concerns about lindane, which is an agricultural chemical. There's other scientists who specialize in this and have spent a great deal of time on it. But their papers are there warning us that these things are accumulating and have been accumulating. Certainly, it's a fairly major concern, And a lot of them, the sources are agriculture.
What do you do about agriculture?
Where the problem lies, I think, is with the industry support, the major industrial development or corporations that support the industry, and researchers in government and academia who aren't looking at the long-term issues enough. We're focusing too much on short-term economic gain to the disbenefit of long-term environmental decline. You know, a couple of years of applying a particular chemical and we find out yield goes up by 3%, so we approve it and bang, it's out there being used. But we never look at the long-term implications of that chemical. And that's why things like lindane were out there being used on canola until 2001. And then the specialists in health and biology were saying, that's a chemical that's really harmful to the environment. And we're seeing things like bioaccumulation and toxification of environments. So we really have to look to the leaders, academics, scientists, government scientists, to start doing better environmental reviews of, the research that they do and get away from the short-term gain.
Is there anything that surprised you as you toured Canada looking for these problems?
I didn't get a chance to show you, tonight one of the clips I wanted to show was the Richelieu River coming into the St. Lawrence. I was shocked. We flew over that area. And the Richelieu is a deep, rich brown color. I'm told by the scientists down there that it's due to hog manure from the South St. Lawrence basins. The Richelieu is it's such a total contrast with the St. Lawrence, which is a blue. You know, the St. Lawrence is still relatively clean at that point, having come out of Lake Ontario. That was shocking. That was just stunning to see such an obvious pollution plume coming out of that watershed. The extent of contamination throughout the country astonished me. You know, I've been pretty hard on southern Alberta and the livestock developments, but I was astonished to see the pollution in many other areas. The concerns, the Okanagan Basin, concerns, they've had a huge health, an outbreak of pathogenic infection in the population in Kelowna. In the past, they have concerns about water quality, and they have huge concerns about water quantity. So the Okanagan could really be seriously impacted by climate change. Southern Alberta, really seriously impacted by climate change. Southern Saskatchewan, the Great Lakes, all of the contamination of eels and other populations in the Great Lakes that, end up poisoning mammals, beluga whales far from the original source. there were just so many things. You know, the mines in the north, the oil sands developments at the scale are just stunning. I don't think people comprehend the scale of the disruption. So, you know, we're really reaching a point of absolutely changing the earth, and we'd have no clue what the consequence is going to be.
Well, something that astounded me, too, was when you talked about embalming fluid being a number one source of pollution in Ontario.
Well, it's certainly a big concern. You know, I don't know I don't think it ranks right up there with zebra mussels, but it's quite astonishing that here we've realized, hey, you know, we have embalming fluids leaking out of graveyards and contaminating our groundwater, and we drink our groundwater. Maybe we need to change the way we do these things. You know, I think that's probably definitely appropriate advice at this point. You know.
You've titled this DVD set Water Under Fire, and it seems like it's under fire from all directions. Why is there so much pressure on our water?
Globally, population. Regionally, for Canada, it's because we are really, you know, taking our resources rapidly and selling them to support our economy. We are still major resource sellers. You know, Alberta is just a simply a resource seller. Canada has. I was astonished at the degree to which Canada has messed up our water supplies and our environment in traveling all the way across the country. We have to change what we do. You know, we really do.
We've benefited a lot from science in terms of our ability, our improved ability to measure and prove that certain problems exist. What's it going to take now in terms of science to help us correct these problems?
That's the $64,000 question, right, in many respects. I think reviewing many of the things that we do. How can we start to do, you know, we should be doing long-term research which directs agriculture away from intensive use of energy and chemicals. You know, there are damn good organic farmers out there. I've seen them. I visited with two French-Canadian gentlemen who farm in that little Valmarie area of southern Saskatchewan, little French enclave, and they're purely organic. They get wonderful yields. And they're a large operation. So I think it's possible to move agriculture away from a lot of the chemical utilization that we've done in the past. Now, the single biggest threat we probably have facing us is probably environmental threat is changing atmospheric chemistry and its impact on the environment, and that's going to be very broad based. Huge impacts on water, huge impacts on a lot of other things, disease vectors and so forth. So health. There's lots we can do. We just have to change our thinking and be willing to change.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Thanks, Cheryl.
That was Dr. Jim Byrne, a professor specializing in water and atmospheric interactions at the University of Lethbridge. He's also a co-producer of Water Under Fire, a 7-part television series which is available on DVD. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by Alberta Ingenuity, the University of Lethbridge, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the Alberta Conservation Association, Science Alberta Foundation, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Research Council, Ducks Unlimited Canada, and Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.